Welcome to episode 63 of the Strong Style Story Podcast here on the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. I am your host, Selector Jeffrey Wessel. You can find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style on Twitter. The blog is at strongstylestory.tumblr.com. And with me today, of course, you know, my usual co-host, you know, we've been down this road for a long time, Chris Damasceno. Chris, how you doing, brother?
Hey, doing all right. Feeling a little under the weather, but nothing that will stop me from talking New Japan Pro Wrestling as we've embarked on a new beginning into 2020. And boy, did they decide to drop a lot of news on us on this cycle.
Yeah, I don't think we've had, you could be anywhere near under the weather as I was when it was -4 in Chicago this past Friday. I'm still surprised my car started.
Yeah, we were pretty much at around like close to single digits for a couple of days here and got a good amount of snow over the last week as well. So that's probably what did it for me. But nevertheless, like having that Chicago weather plus wind to consider on top of it.
That was hell.
I had to
walk from the train station to work too. So that fucking sucked.
Been there, done that.
I go to buy tamales, and they only had the green ones left by then. I was like, oh, shit.
Rip in pieces. A horror story in 3 tweets by Jeffrey Wessel.
It really is. So, well, let's not get into how my morning today went. But anyway. So we just finished the New Beginning cycle of shows. Two different tours on two continents at that.
Mm-hmm.
And let's dive into that. Firstly, New Beginning USA. There's been like bits and pieces showing up on NJPW World.
Yeah, some of the more important moments have shown up, but I figure it'll be mostly like what they did with Showdown in San Jose and Los Angeles, where they have all the footage already. They're just working on basically getting it edited and all else, so that way they can post the full thing on New Japan World at some point, probably over the next month or so. We'll get those shows in there. So it is the result when they're there.
Now, I don't actually remember if we covered this on the last episode, but I think we did actually, because I'm looking at this, and yeah, we posted the last episode after the
lineups were announced. Yes.
After the New Beginning USA had already started, so we did cover this. But there were reports that Kota Ibushi's flu was actually worse than flu.
Yep.
They were saying it was Mallory Weiss syndrome, which also known as gastroesophageal laceration.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out maybe it wasn't as bad as thought, because he did show up in Osaka.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a couple of days prior to that, Chris Charlton tweeted out a small video of Ibushi doing stuff within the ring and basically mentioned that apparently Ibushi was found to be, 100% not just healthy, but apparently, sane of mind or whatever it is after running, CTE scans or whatever it was.
He had his head examined. He actually had his head examined. In the most Kota Ibushi fashion possible, you know.
Oh, my God.
But
Kota Ibushi is probably an alien. We just don't have proof yet.
He's the gift that keeps on giving. But a couple of other things that took place here. First of all, at the show in Durham, North Kakalaka, in between the third and fourth matches, Marty Scurll made an appearance.
Yes.
Ostensibly to challenge, Jay White. to a match at Supercard of Honor this coming Mania weekend. And we know there's more Mania weekend news about New Japan.
Yes.
But we're going to talk about... We may get to a little bit of that later, but we still have time to cover this more fully on an upcoming episode. So we're going to wait until all the announcements are made so we can talk about them. But can we talk about that for a second? Because that seems to be a much more public overture that the Ring of Honor and New Japan deal is still kind of on.
Yeah, I think from what I saw or just throughout the course of the beginning of this year is that New Japan almost was, after the shows from last year, kind of came to the realization that Ring of Honor needed to sort of not only find itself but get its collective poop together. And with Marty coming into this role, as we've heard at this point, you know, head booker, officially taking the functions over from Delirious and such, making really the simplest decisions you could possibly make, such as stuff involving bringing back the ROH Pure Championship, the guest announcements that we have from New Japan roster talent that are going to be at Supercard of Honor as well. A lot of it being Bullet Club related, since Bullet Club apparently is doing another one of their branded parties like they did at last year's Mania, which apparently was a rousing success. A friend of the show, Jack Heartless, actually worked on the event for the Lapel Yeah Guys and said it was a pretty big hit. So not surprised that they're doing that again. But it's really interesting in the fact that a lot of these simple moves are being made, and it's almost like it's kind of a olive branch of sorts to show New Japan in a way that, hey, Ring of Honor can still be a viable partner for you. We just need a little bit of time to get our collective things together. And it seems Marty is really working towards getting some of that put together again and kind of reestablishing that relationship, which, I mean, you need to do that at this point, I feel, unless you wanted to just sever it entirely, which we almost thought last year that's the route that Ring of Honor was going. So,
well, right, and, you know, this only helps Ring of Honor because, I mean, yeah. New Japan don't really benefit at this point because now we even have, you know, we have New Japan of America. And,
exactly.
And we also have, you know, there's still, you know, the will they, won't they of, you know, AEW, which, you know, that could still happen at any time. Mm-hmm. You know, because we have, you know, two different factions within AEW. One adamantly seems to not want to do it, and then you have a faction in AEW that adamantly does want to, mm-hmm. to do it. I have actually gone back and rewatched Chris Jericho's post, you know, Night 2 Wrestle Kingdom press conference, and yeah, he broke character in that press conference, you know?
Yeah. I think Jericho, at this point, having worked enough New Japan one-shots like that, I do feel that he does have a very positive image of the company and is willing to do business on it because he sees that you can make a lot of money by working these programs like right. he's been doing, so.
And let's face it, you know, we're talking about disrespect. How many times has Jericho's wrestled 6 matches in New Japan, and he's done the job in half of them.
Yeah. Again, it's that willingness of doing business and doing it right. So no wonder, like, I think that New Japan wants to work with him more and vice versa.
Yeah.
Because he understands that at this point, what he is, who he is, and what he does, and it's just, it's working around that. So.
Right. But anyway, we talk about AEW enough on our other show, Boom Goes the Dynamite. So anyway, let's move on. So yeah, there may still be a relationship yet between Ring of Honor and New Japan. Now, of course, you know, around this time, usually we have, you know, the Honor Rising, but that's not happening this time.
No.
We have some other things going on, which we'll get into later. But for the most part, the New Beginning USA was what it was. I still very much would like to see the matches involving the Rock and Roll Express versus Toriano and Colt Cabana.
Yeah, that I'm looking forward to, and also seeing Tana teaming with his old American dads once again.
Yeah, I do definitely want to see that. But really, the only really major thing of note was we had an IWGP, you know, heavyweight tag team title change. So that was a result from Wrestle Kingdom erased already.
Yeah, it does make me wonder specifically if they just got cold feet at the fact that it would have been babyface team versus babyface team if they decided to do Kota and Tanahashi against Finjuice, but...
Well, I
feel like we kind of got robbed of the really unique match that we could have had at some point.
Well, you know what? I also think that perhaps maybe because of Kota's illness or whatever, they just didn't know. So they had to do something. I think maybe that was kind of an audible call. But I mean, it's going to come into play later. I still think this could still happen. And I also think that, you know, because the Guerrillas of Destiny held those tag belts for so long through 2019 that maybe we're just going to see it hot potato a little bit.
Which, hey, fair enough, given that, as you mentioned, we had a dominant reign throughout most of 2019 at this point. Yeah, if the tag titles need to change hands one or two different times, I think as long as they don't overdo it with like five or six different changes in like the next 3 months or something, we'll be okay.
Yeah, because I think we all still have the PTSD from like, you know, WCW from late 99 to the end of how often titles change hands.
You more so than me, but yeah, that's definitely still a thing.
Yeah. Right, oh, right, because you weren't even around for that, so I forgot about that. So anyway, so that was the New Beginning USA. So let's talk the New Beginnings in Japan. We have 2 days in Sapporo and in the big show at Osaka Joe Hall. Had some, you know, Cork and Hall shows in between. So let's briefly talk those. I'm just going to sum this up with, all the hype that we had personally felt for the feud between Minoru Suzuki and Jon Moxley was 100% justified.
Definitely so.
Because I'm just going to say, just if we're going to go chronologically, Okada and Moxley against Taichi and Suzuki was an early match of the year contender for me. Real talk.
Oh, yeah. It was so much fun. They played. I was very, very pleasantly surprised with how well Okada and Moxley played off each other in that particular match.
Yes.
Between the entrance antics with them kind of looking at each other and immediately hitting the ring to just start brawling with Suzuki and Taichi was as hot of a start as you could ask for a match.
The dueling guardrails between Suzuki and Moxley. Oh my God. And also I mentioned this. I have mentioned this on Boom Goes the Dynamite a couple of times. I want to make it for the record here on Strong Style Story too. Can we talk the professionalism of Jon Moxley to still be selling his eye injury from AEW?
Yeah, in Japan,
that was a thing like, he had absolutely no reason to do it.
Yep, he kept kayfabe on that regard there, and just
well as much as he could because he lost a couple of times.
Yeah, I mean he lost a couple of times, but I mean at the very least you could still chalk that up to the match being intense enough that stuff was flying around everywhere and the like. Biggest thing I would say too is that out of this whole Big Boss Jon Moxley look, having Kazuchika Okada next to him, basically have like a Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker thing there with Big Boss and Kaz together. Kazuhiro Miller is half Japanese after all, so.
Oh my goodness. But
I am not the only one who saw that. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, Dave, no, I'm Dave sure you're
Thunder
not.
Was also about it as well.
Oh, I'm sure you weren't. But yeah, let's sticking with night one of Sapporo. Evil still cannot seem to get past Tomohiro Ishii in singles, and that's disturbing to me.
Yeah, Ishii is his white whale at this point, which is. Wow, like, here's hoping G1 this year, he finally just gets that monkey off.
I was so hoping that Evil was finally going to beat him, because, I mean, the way they were going with that.
Yeah.
And it was a fun little feud, too, for what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, it's very simplistic, and on the perspective of Evil sees himself as a true New Japan guy, while Tomohiro Ishii is one of the four Black Saints who came into the company at a low point of it, but who's basically made a niche for himself in the Never Division. So there's kind of that bit of pride there between the two, and Ishii keeps getting his number every single time. It's in sports, sometimes you see that too, where it doesn't matter how hard a team works, sometimes the other team just has your number regardless of whatever it is.
We see it all the time. So, and then, you know, the main event of night one was Shingo beating Goto for the Never Openweight Championship. So that's another Wrestle
Early
Kingdom
match of the year.
I was going to say another Wrestle Kingdom result chalked off.
Yeah, but I thought that out of the champions, that would have been undone the earliest. Honestly, it would have had my money on Goto, just because it's Hirooki Goto at this point. He has a shiny moment in early January, and then everything else is kind of crapshoot. So.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, it's great that Shingo has a singles title now, and now, of course, Shingo also a two belts.
Yep, Shingo with two belts, and to be honest, Shingo Takagi, I think, is the best representative you could have for the open weight division at this point. Because
he was our Wrestler of the Year last year.
Yes, but not only that, but I think that with his style and at his size, where it's right on that border between junior heavyweight and heavyweight, it opens the avenues for this to be an actual open weight belt. I mean, we've already seen of Roppongi 3K show his interest on getting a piece of Shingo one more time to redo Best of Super Juniors from last year. You kind of have Tomohiro Ishii now on the horizon as well, after beating Evil coming for him next on the singles portion of those belts. So, I mean, you can do a lot with Shingo having a long reign this year around with the Never Openweight title, so I hope they get to explore a lot of that over the course of this year.
But can we go back to the drum that we've beaten so many times on the history of this program throughout the 4+ years that we've been doing this, is that Hirooki Goto once again looks like a complete asshole. And again, we know why he stays. Because, you know, he was a dojo guy, he's a lifer, and let's face it, the money's pretty good. I mean, compared to anywhere else. But I mean, can you see him in All Japan or Big Japan or the Big Japan Strong Division or something, you know?
Yeah, at this point, I think I even made a joke at one point when talking about Hirooki Goto, that his odds of being a Triple Crown champion in All Japan would be much better than the odds of him holding three belts at any given way, shape, or point in New Japan.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think he's going to get the Nakanishi sympathy reign. You know?
It just feels very much like a situation where he isn't slotted in that kind of position where he could challenge for the heavyweight at any given point, and if so, just with everything that's going on within the main event scene, it's hard to predict if something like that could happen. But then again, this is also coming from the same person who didn't expect Kenta to suddenly pop up on January 5th and beat the shit out of Naito to get a title shot. So who knows what 2020 could give us.
Well, I mean, and that's true, but I mean, we all know the narrative of Goto. He's had, what, 9 IWGP heavyweight title shots and has come up bust each and every time.
Much.
And I think the last time he had a title shot, wasn't that the match with Okada?
Yes, it was the match with Okada where he went all white.
That was the one. That was the last time.
And then got punked out kind of like a bitch.
Yeah, I mean,
sorry,
it's
Goto
just
fans, but
yeah, I mean, we don't say it. We're actually, I mean, because Goto is actually very good. It's just, how do you get behind him when, and the crowd's still into him? I mean, you heard the pops when he, for him during the G1 announcements too.
Yeah, but I do think that it's that matter of the crowd likes him because he's good within his role, but they also know not to expect too much out of him at this point, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, same, but You know, it's just, again, the I just, you know, I think he really would be much, much better served elsewhere than New Japan at this point.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a fair assessment to make, I would say.
So, anyway, so let's move on to night two, in which, as far as the main stuff, okay, once again, you know, Moxley and Suzuki, you know, made what would have been a pretty standard Chaos versus, you know, Chaos Juniors against Suzuki Gun, you know, tag match into a must watch. The moment of Suzuki and Moxley both kicking Taguchi.
Yeah, priceless.
That was
Taguchi.
Great.
It's like poor Taguchi doesn't deserve this, but wrong place, wrong time, man.
Yeah.
Wrong place, wrong time.
And then Taguchi had the nerve to take Moxley's belt. That Moxley punked him out in the back for that one. That was fun. But so I have a question. Here's one of the many New Japan elephants in the room. What the fuck is Doki's purpose at this point, other than to take the falls for Suzuki-gun?
He's basically the Taka Michinoku role at this point.
Yeah, because Taka is
the fall guy. Yeah,
yeah, Taka's not coming around anymore.
No, I mean, he's got just tap out at this point, his own self-promotion now that runs every so often, so yeah, he's not coming back.
Well, his own self-promotion after he got booted from his other self-promotion.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I think, is it fair to say that that whole thing was probably what borked the possibility of a Yato Yoshida coming in?
Yeah, I think that's 100% it, because he's in all Japan nowadays, isn't he?
Yeah, he's going to be in Champion Carnival.
Nice.
So is our friend of the show, Shigehiro Irie. So.
Mm-hmm. And I also heard Sugiura is coming in for the first time since the Exodus.
Yeah, Takashi Sugiura, yep.
Jesus.
Let's just in an All Japan show.
Yeah, no, we leave that for our good folks at SOS Wrestle Talk, who do talk pretty much all pro wrestling all around, so go give them a check.
Lest we forget Pro in the Rough, too.
That as well.
Mm-hmm. With our good friend Lawrence.
Indeed.
Good friend and former co-host Lawrence, who still occasionally joins us for Boom Goes the Dynamite.
Indeed.
Anyway, so moving on, Zack Sabre Jr. beats Will Ospreay for the Undisputed British Heavyweight Championship. Hold that thought for later in the program.
Yeah.
And then, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, in general, this particular match wasn't too bad. I think Zack is a fairly good opponent for Will, and the fact that Will can't do a whole lot of his bullshit stints without getting caught by Sabre, so it kind of adds that extra level of dimension to their stuff. So not too shabby from them, even if I think the match did drag on a good like 5 to 7 minutes.
Right. And then the main event, Kazuchika Okada beating Taiichi. You know, number one, I'm still debating whether or not that was the right result.
I do think that Taiichi could have used the win here as well, absolutely.
I think so too, but I mean, I don't know. But also, this did not need to be a 30-minute match.
I think it's that thing where with Hokkaido, they wanted to give Taiichi a little bit of a shine and give the crowd kind of a New Japan-esque main event. But I do think that, again, it falls into that trap of the first 5 to 7 minutes not mattering as much, because you know this is going the like 30-esque length. Because the ending sequences were great, but it's just that beginning where you know they're just dragging it for the sake of time rather than just, you know, getting on with it.
Yeah, and I know everybody calls this the New Japan style now, but let's not forget this actually has its roots in the Royal Road, you know, All Japan era.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, because main events in New Japan did not always go this long.
No.
Well, a lot of times they were very quick, in fact.
Mm-hmm. It's a trend. Whether we like it or hate it, we know it's there at this point. But
before we leave Sapporo, They made announcements. They are touring Hokkaido for the first time in 7 years.
And, I mean, considering the changes that they had to do to the schedule due to the Olympics, yeah, not good on Hokkaido for getting themselves a tour out of this. This should be fun.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Hokkaido really gets any love from New Japan, all things considered. I will say this. I don't have the list in front of me, unfortunately, but I remember when they were playing the video, the one fact stuck out from me. One of the locations they're going to, I think it's on July the 15th. I could be wrong. But they said that they hadn't been to this particular city in 22 years. So this was the last time they were there. We still had the NWO in New Japan, and Inoki had just retired.
My goodness, yeah, it's very, very, very long time.
I mean, Kensuke Sasaki was one of the guys in New Japan at that time, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's nuts to think about, again, just as you mentioned, you know, some of these newer cities being visited. But then again, that's kind of an awesome opportunity for a lot of those fans in those particular areas that, as you mentioned, haven't seen a show in such a long time. It's an opportunity for them to be able to see something up close rather than having to travel to one of these major cities in Japan to just try and catch something. So, yeah, no, that's really exciting. So
yeah, I mean, it is exciting. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I hope many of the shows do hit NJPW World when it happens. But that, you know, that's way far off. Yeah, that's way far off. So we got time.
We got those announcements, and then I think one that I think was just more announced from like the website and social media as well. New Japan getting themselves a new Zealand dojo established now over in Auckland.
I forgot to blog about that, didn't I?
No worries, but I mean, with the Bad Luck Fale connection, it does make sense that it's there. But yeah, that's an awesome way again to explore that Australia, New Zealand market that doesn't get a lot of love. New Japan is within the right track to make a base over there to get guys, because I mean, you've got Hanari already there from that particular area. Jay White obviously being like the biggest success story out of New Zealand. So yeah. So
real quick, we had the 3 days in Corican Hall. You know, there was a title match in the end, the Never Openweight Six Man Comedy Tag Team Title match, and so Shingo continued to be a two belter after that.
Indeed.
Although, once again, Toriano, Sublime Master Thief, stole the fucking belts.
Toriano just gives no fucks, and I love him for it.
So, yeah, you gotta love some Toriano. I mean, you know.
Absolutely.
I swear, you know. You gotta dig him.
Imagine not loving Toriano. Couldn't be us.
Yeah. I mean, he is only the mascot of our show, so.
Exactly.
So moving on to last Sunday and the new beginning in Osaka, which was live on NJPW World, as well as Fight TV, which leads me to a tangent we have to take up here. Fight TV was on some bullshit this week.
With the Lariato ban. Yep.
Well, and a few other people too. A few other people got reported too, like TDE Wrestling.
Oh Jesus!
Hey, you know, here's the thing: most of the New Japan footage doesn't come from Fight TV because who the fuck wants to pay $30 for a pay per view for a single, you know, pay-per-view on Fight TV when you can have, you know, 48 years worth of content for less than 10 a month on NJPW World.
Yeah, pretty much. And not only that as well, too, as you mentioned, with the different content as well, from what we've been hearing as well, Kevin Kelly and Chris Charlton have been hard at work dubbing some older New Japan matches with commentary as well for the English viewing audience. So that's something to look out for here pretty soon.
Now, since that time, I did rather say that Fight TV could eat shit, but at the same time, it seems like things are getting worked out because a few companies have stuck up for Lariato and others, including AEW, it should be pointed out.
Mm-hmm.
But Yeah, so it's I guess GCW, Game Changer Wrestling, were kind of pissed off at this too.
Oh yeah, they were completely, because Lariato is one of their biggest like supporters in terms of like getting their shows every time that they're live. So
yeah,
a lot of the companies I think that are within this modern trend that are actually not stuck in the 2000s, they know that GIFs aren't hurting their shows in any way. If anything, it's getting people specifically to be like, well, maybe I should go tune into this right now.
That's yeah, going exactly. Fine. I mean, okay. Exactly. But and the whole thing with the Digital Millennium Copyright Act is one of the worst enforced laws in history. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
So, because all it does is it just helps corporations and doesn't help actual artists at all.
And again, the biggest thing I feel out of this is that some suit who has no idea what the fuck they're doing was the one who made that call. And unfortunately, like the people who know this sort of stuff that we're talking about had to just kind of sigh and go, okay, I guess we have to do this because otherwise that's our asses on the line kind of thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, solidarity with it again, everybody.
Yep, solidarity with Lariato in whatever honorific he takes, because he's on his third one now. So
yeah, 100%.
Anyway, back to the new beginning in Osaka. We start off with the Manabu Nakanishi final in Osaka Joe Hall, which was not his final match, as some people seem to think it was, because he has a little bit of a series coming up here. It was what it was. Nakanishi got to say his farewells in Osaka. So that was nice.
Yeah.
I mean, it was what it was. Again, I've never been a Nakanishi fan. So it's like, oh, okay, huh, he's retiring, okay. He's never been one of my favorites, so sorry to say.
It is what it is. So
yeah, exactly. Following that, we had the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championship. Sho and Yo actually retained the belts for once.
They finally slayed their white whale, which was the team of Kanemaru and Despy. So
yeah,
congrats, boys! You finally did it.
Yep. So that was cool. I mean, it was an okay match. It wasn't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It wasn't much to write home about. Then we had Finjuice, and the Golden Aces up against Guerrillas of Destiny, Chase Owens, and Yujiro Takahashi. This is leading to something, so
yeah,
hooray.
The seeds are being planted, and eventually we can talk about this on the New Japan Road lineup cards as well, because it does pay off there.
Yep.
To an extent.
Okada and Ospreay beat Taichi and Sabre.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just angle building. Jay White beats Sonata.
That I kind of saw coming, to be honest, because it feels like they're doing this whole thing where they're being very specific that Sonata has been the one guy within LIJ that just hasn't been able to win a singles match to save his life over the past few months.
Yeah.
So it could be something building towards. Maybe we finally get the first person to break away from Los Ingobernables de Japón, or when he gets his first singles win, it's going to be like a super meaningful thing, and maybe he wins New Japan Cup this year. Who knows, man? It's hard to tell with Sonata at this point.
Yeah, he seems kind of like weirdly in this weird limbo state right now. But New Japan Cup, we don't have anything for that yet, so that'll be on an upcoming show. So.
Yeah.
The last three matches, all of which are must-see, Hiromu beats Ryu Lee, succeeding his first defense since winning the title and coming back from injury. That was great.
Phenomenal. They play that drama up as much as they could with a lot of those spots. I think all of us cringed 100% of the way when the Phoenix Flex got teased.
Oh yeah,
the Dragon Driver just
like, God, no,
you're not doing this again. No.
Yeah, God, no, don't do it. Don't fucking do it. But no, it was a great match. They all said their "I love yous" in the back afterward. You know.
Yeah.
In fact, Hiromu, if you go back and watch that press conference, him singing out of the blue,
yeah,
that was something.
And singing it to like the tune of I can't remember the band's name, but the song is "Down on Me."
Oh, that was Jackal.
Yes, thank you. Because that was definitely like to the tune of that fucking chorus of that song.
Yeah, you're outright. Right. It was. Yeah. Now you mentioned that, it was. The match following that, oh my god, the fact that this match overshadowed a Hiromu Dragon Lee match.
Yeah, that's saying something.
Should tell you fucking everything about this match. John Moxley defeats Minoru Suzuki to retain the U.S. Heavyweight Championship. This is legit a match of the year contender for me, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they really, it played off every single bit of world building that they've been doing since January 5th, and just very well executed. You could tell both of them really wanted to make this something special, and they did.
The result was
a little unexpected for us, given that John Moxley is mainly an AEW contracted wrestler, even though that doesn't get in the way of him making certain bookings and appearances like we know are going to be happening during the course of WrestleMania weekend, for example. But
right.
It was an interesting call in that for most of us, we were expecting this was the point where Suzuki takes the belt. He becomes like the first Japanese wrestler to win it. And he can, you know, tour America accordingly during these NJPW in America shows and, you know, defend it there and that sort of thing. But that could still be coming. Who knows?
Right.
It was an interesting call given the timing, I guess, is the best way of putting it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it would have maybe been, I guess, quote unquote, better had Suzuki won it for that, you know, so that way the U.S. title can actually be defended in the USA. But I mean, we also know that this was also a vanity belt created for Kenny Omega.
Yes.
And to pop in attendance for, you know, the G1 shows in Long Beach that, of course, we all attended.
Yeah. And to me specifically, it's one of those belts where it's like, it doesn't really have a specific amount of direction, but if the person holding it is important enough, it makes it matter. And you can't deny that John Moxley's stock at this point is at an all-time high to where you might as well ride it for as long as you can get it.
I mean, can you imagine? He may be one of the biggest guys who has benefited from this new environment and leaving WWE at this point. I mean, there's no way he can't be, you know? Hello?
Oops, sorry, my mic was muted there for a second.
Okay.
No, I would say this is just the timing is everything, and some way, somehow, he lucked out big time on his contract running out when it did, to where just, hey, come in, do all these different things, and just, he seems to be at a much happier place in his life, too, on top of it, which has just helped considerably with his stuff.
I mean, you go back and watch some of his Dean Ambrose promos, like from just before he left, and now how he acts, you know, back as Moxley now, and it just, even his promo style has changed so much because...
Oh, yeah, definitely so.
He is much, you know, more natural and loose with it, like... Okay, so, I mean, we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, but, yeah, so after the match, you know, Zack Sabre Jr. comes and avenges his boss, as they said on the commentary.
Yeah.
John Moxley versus Suzuki-Gun has been his one-man war against Suzuki-Gun.
Yeah, it's kind of the way fate ended up working out for him, because initially, for those who might have just jumped into the New Japan wagon, like, late last year until, like, really even as far as Wrestle Kingdom this year around, John Moxley's G1 campaign started against Taiichi of Suzuki-Gun, and he beat the crap out of Taiichi in that particular match without any hesitation. So really, that you could trace the first shot really being fired at Suzuki-Gun at that point, to be completely honest.
Oh, yeah. And furthermore, the post-match promos... Actually, Sabre's was really good, too. You know, I know John Moxley.
Jonathan Moxley.
Yeah, but then, you know, Moxley with a Sabre, are you a soldier? Calling him a, and then calling it, following that with calling him a human fucking udon noodle.
Which, what a phenomenal line.
Imagine not liking Jon Moxley.
Just couldn't be us. Could not be us.
Oh my goodness, this is just. How do you deny the sheer wrestling genius of this man at this point?
I don't know. Somebody, I'm sure, has a snarky enough answer for that. And to
I'm
them,
sure,
we say,
I'm sure, because
fuck off.
Yeah, because everybody has their own opinions on things, and that's fine, Joe. But is he bringing me all of the joy? Yes. And let's not forget too that in addition to him selling the eye, still at this point, he also flew to Alabama and back in between these shows.
And then flew right back immediately after that.
I mean, good God. I mean, this man. And he's going to be fighting, and he's going to be wrestling Jeff Cobb on TV next week.
Yes. The rematch from G1 Climax earlier last year, by the way. That match is up in New Japan World if people want to check it out as well. You want to do that prior to your AEW watching this week.
So let's get to the main event now, which, this turned into something. The double gold championship, IWGP heavyweight and intercontinental titles, Tetsuya Naito retaining against Kenta, despite an absolute fucking gusher.
Yeah, and
My God, that was worrisome.
Yeah, I know a lot of people were not specifically talking about this match compared to like the previous two matches, but I felt it was a good match in its own right there, and the gushing seemed unintentional, which I think is why he bled as much as he did.
Oh, it totally was. I mean, there's no way.
But it outright added to that finishing stretch so much between them.
I mean, it did, but you're like, oh my God, this is like not healthy at all.
No, not at all. But then again, when has Tetsuya Naito ever actually cared about his own self, his own, self enough?
Yeah, but I mean, again, I don't know if this one needed to be over half an hour itself. Of course, you know, a lot of the first 5 minutes was Kenta trying to outdo Naito as far as the fucking around to start the match.
And you know, I was okay with that because it did play to their characters initially, with Kenta trying to get that mental edge at first, and then Naito showing him how to do it and just getting him all riled up, which, showed the difference. So, at the very least, rather than doing like the holds and stuff like that we're used to for that first 5 to 7 minutes that you're just like, okay, we know this is going to 30, they at least stretched it in kind of a different, interesting way for me, to where I still kept in tune with it compared to others.
Yeah, I think the best part is that you could see the look on Naito's face when Kenta was trying to stall, and just like, you absolute fucking amateur.
Sick of this shit.
And you know, what was great was, you know, post-match, even though he's still, to quote Peter Winson of Greetings from Allentown on this feed, a five-alarm lucha blade job.
him. My God, yep.
Yeah, forget the Muta scale. Yeah, I mean, this is definitely a Muta scale. This is like a 0.99 Muta scale. And I do believe it was absolutely intentional, too. Unintentional, excuse me. Sorry. Yeah, I don't think you. I mean, we've seen the post match picks and, you know, post, stitches or staples, whatever those were.
Yeah.
That was not intentional.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was not intentional. But, what was that? Oh, like, remember 2015 G1? Tenzan hit that flying headbutt on Yano? Like,
yes.
Just above his eyebrow, and, like, there were stains of Toriyano on the New Japan canvas for like the rest of the year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But afterwards, Naito cut a post-match for the ages in which he basically told Kenta, "Yeah, no, Tranquilo, get the fuck out of here."
Like, yeah, literally.
It's like, they're doing Kilo, Kayete, Kayete.
Yeah, get the fuck out of here.
Shoes them off, just shoes them off.
Yeah,
and then
we
get, obviously, the roll call that we didn't get in Tokyo Dome, but the biggest thing is Hiromu's there.
Oh, yeah.
And it's one of those where, the promise that they made to each other before Hiromu went on excursion, it's finally going to be happening at the anniversary show.
Oh, yeah. At the 40th anniversary show, on which is not actually on the anniversary, but, you know, whatever. It will be at Oda Ward, though.
Mm-hmm.
The scene of the first show ever.
Which
we talked about, a long ass time ago on Strong Style History, Lawrence and I. So go mm-hmm. go into the archives and look that up. I think it was like episode 3 of Strong Style History. So that was some good stuff. There were some major announcements happened too here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get into those real quick. Let's do the most obvious one, which was the announcement of Wrestle Dynasty on August 22nd at Madison Square Garden, apparently running up against an NXT TakeOver show in Boston.
Yes.
So once again, the New York-Boston rivalry continues, as it does in most things.
Pretty much, because, yeah, that's SummerSlam weekend that they're running that on, because it's basically the TakeOver on that Saturday, and then SummerSlam that Sunday in Boston, which... You know what? Like, WWE has their audience. They'll get their numbers out of it, but I don't think anybody from New York is necessarily, I think... Some people might skip out for Boston, but then again, some might just decide, yeah, we'll stick around here and watch this show instead. The biggest interest, I think, for a lot of people is, A, is this going to be a New Japan-only show? B, if so, are we going to get announcements enough in advance before tickets go on sale? Because... If there was one thing that I do believe that the last Madison Square Garden show did not do as good of a job of was obviously not having like a card ready to kind of bring people's interest. Because at the time, as we've mentioned on the show multiple times, the Elite were still a part of the company. And that's what drove a lot of those sales at the time, which got Madison Square Garden to sell out. So it's a much different environment.
Well, it is a much different environment, but also don't forget that they also announced G1 Supercard like 9 months ahead of time, too.
Yes.
And there was, again, that was, as you pointed out, that was before All In, so there was a very reasonable assumption that the Elite were going to be part of that show at that point.
Yes.
But then again, we were both at MSG, Chris, and Madison Square Garden was fucking packed regardless.
Yes, and they were hot for the New Japan side of the fence on stuff, even with Ring of Honor trying to derail that as much as they did with their booking decisions at that juncture.
Yeah,
so,
but no, this is being advertised as a New Japan show. I mean, there's an actual New Japan logo in
yes.
all this. So, yeah, this is a New Japan show.
Yeah, so, and considering that, obviously, again, the Olympics in Tokyo playing a hand on a lot of what they're doing with these shows... and this kind of coming off of the Minium's heels as well on top of it too, we should expect hopefully something big for this. The only question is, you know, what are title pictures and the like going to look like? At the very least, I would like New Japan to make sure that they go, hey, you're going to see a heavyweight title match. You're going to see an IC title match. You're going to see like... kind of at the very least say which titles we should expect to be seeing there to be defended and stuff like that, just so that way, even if you can't put a solid card out until post-Dominion, at the very least, you're building the hype for that market of, you know, yeah, we've got to come out and see this sort of thing, because otherwise,
yeah.
You're looking at another situation like what happened at the American Airlines in Dallas, where there's going to be a crowd that's loud and vocal and it's going to sound great, but aesthetically, it's not going to look great in terms of filming it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, but we'll see. I mean, I don't think they should have any trouble. I mean, like I said, we were there even without the Elite. Madison Square Garden was freaking packed, you know. And of course, it was also WrestleMania weekend too. This is a little bit of a disaster situation. But I mean, if you can't sell out, you know, it's I mean, it's not like New York City doesn't have a lack of people to go to New Japan.
Sure.
You know, it's New York City. It's not some you know quaint town. It's you know New York City.
It's so. Basically just a situation where you just would have to hope that they advertise this super well. So
yeah. How do you think Vince McMahon is feeling about what used to be one of his, you know, well, it was, you know, his territorial strongholds is now, New Japan is now a part of this now.
Apparently, if you are to believe Kevin Kelly is in appearances he's done in podcasts over the past few months, Vince is apparently still pissed. But you know what? That's what happens when you decide to, you know, be cheap about the places where you run. And when you know Madison Square Garden is going to cost you money and you decide, oh, we're just going to do the odd house show or two here every year rather than, you know, bringing TV and stuff like that to the Garden. It's kind of just like they're going to take their bookings elsewhere, man. Like, James Dolan does not give a shit of where the money's coming from as long as he's getting his money for the arena.
Yeah, I mean, well, at the same time, I mean, that it used to be one of the high points of the WWF, you know, calendar. You know, it was just a regular, you know, event at Madison Square Garden, and they've let that go.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't blame, you know, New Japan or Ring of Honor or even, hell, I mean, Triple H tried, but that didn't quite work out.
No.
But, you know, it's, you know, it is what it is, and I think it's good. And they're, you know what, they're not exactly running up against each other in the same town, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, WWE is already in Boston. Why not, you know? Not like there's a direct competition here at that mm-hmm. point.
But, yeah, you're appealing to two different niches, I feel, at this point. And
yeah.
I mean, look, it's going to be the wrestling at the very least is probably going to be good regardless of where you're going for that. But ideally, this is where New Japan tries to hit it out of the park and gives us something akin to a Wrestle Kingdom in the United States. Because
yeah.
I'm definitely intrigued enough to go give that a shot for sure. So
yeah. We'll see how this goes. But there was a couple of other announcements. One, they mentioned some G1 Climax dates for Osaka in September, but you know, we'll cover that.
Yes,
because we're
getting more Osaka dates. We're also getting a Kobe Hall date as well too, which is
G1 or just
I believe it's during that tour around September October
okay.
as well.
Wow. Uh-huh. So but don't nobody tell Dragon Gate. How about this announcement though? Beginning in April, Friday nights at 8 p.m. on BS Asahi, which is in New Japan minority owner TV Asahi's satellite channel.
Yeah.
World Pro Wrestling will be on there. For the first time in primetime in like decades.
That's insane, to say the least.
That is absolutely major. And of course, World Pro Wrestling is the show that was overdubbed for NJPW on Access for the longest time. You know, until
yeah.
they moved to the English feed of NJPW World. And honestly, I think the presentation on World Pro Wrestling did help break New Japan because they would do like those interviews with folk post match, like you know a couple of weeks after the match or whatever, so they could you know be more conversational. Yeah, you know, I didn't think his wrestling was that great, but you know, you
that's
know, things
thing,
like
yeah,
that, you know,
for sure. Mm-hmm.
And the intros, which was great because we had the timeline, you know, because you know they started on Access. Later, like, you know, 2 years behind. So the first time we saw Naito open up an episode, it was, you know, without, you know, Bokura Naito Tatsuya, you know, with the, you know, and he's wearing like a white sweater vest over a white shirt. And then the next time we see Naito open one, he's already ungobernables. So it's like,
yeah, the radical shifts.
Buenos noches, soy Naito.
Yep. Just. Again, it's awesome for, as you mentioned, the primetime slot is going to be a big help in continuing Bushiroad's plan to just keep them breaking through on the mainstream side of the fence.
And it's on a satellite channel. It's not on terrestrial TV Asahi, which, okay, what, so be it. But, you know, that is huge. I mean,
yeah, it's a step forward, which is still a huge thing.
Wrestling on primetime TV in Japan pretty much died when NTV dropped All Japan, you know, during the Noah exodus, you know. So, I'd be very interested to see how the response is and if there's any sort of way we can get viewing figures for that once this starts in April.
Mm-hmm. But until then, just excited to see where it goes for sure in that regard. And
also, I really kind of wish, because of those interviews and the way that they laid out, I almost kind of wish that they would put episodes of World Pro Wrestling onto NJPW World. Because it is a TV Asahi service.
Yeah. We probably should tweet that accordingly at the powers that be at this point. Maybe we can get that to happen. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it may be superfluous because we can get the full shows on NJPW World. Well, I just kind of like the format of World Pro Wrestling, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I see what you mean.
So, that was the new beginning cycle. We had a couple of things happen this past week. Let's go chronologically. Let's start with Manabu Nakanishi. Went to All Japan.
Yes, he did.
And he got the win too.
Mm-hmm.
Beating Dan Tamura with his Argentine backbreaker.
Yep, the 8-man tagging, which involved a couple of his old friends and such. So, yeah, Manabu Nakanishi enjoying the fruits of his eventual retirement here and just, you know, getting some reps, saying his goodbyes.
But, of course, also, you know, on that show, too, Kento Miyahara tied Toshiaki Kawada.
Yep, and Big Suwama out here to challenge him for that record breaker at this point to see if he can get it or not. And I guess since we are on the bringing up Kento Miyahara, we should probably bring this up too, because remember last show we did discuss this a little bit, that Kazuchika Okada did have a really interesting interview over NJPW 1972, where he mentioned the logistics about possibly running like an all company, show to just display this current generation's pro wrestling against the Olympics. Now, logistics are a little bit harder because buildings in Tokyo are not going to be easy to find in any way, shape, or form with the Olympics taking place all over. But it was just recently in which Kaito Kiyomiya and Kento Miyahara were taking part in Setsubun, which is the day before spring in Japan ceremony at Honnoji Temple. And they talk about it. Hisame, who is, you know, big Noah super fan. We see him on Twitter. Her. Super awesome follow. Thank you.
Yes.
Appreciate it. I wasn't sure on pronouns, so I figured just to keep it. So, but no, they were asked about it, and they did seem open to the idea, which is huge considering that Kento's still the Triple Crown champion, and Kaito just came off of a huge run as GHC heavyweight champion on his end as well.
Right,
so,
because he just dropped to Goshiyazaki.
Goshiyazaki, yep. Good match, by the way, for those
of you. I really enjoyed that match. Unfortunately, the contemporaneous Triple Crown match between Miyahara and Jake Lee, it wasn't the match's fault, but I did kind of doze off during that match. It wasn't the match's fault. I'm just, you know, old. We did talk about this. We kind of said, I wouldn't count on this happening. Miyahara, I'm quoting Hisami's translation of this from Tokyo Sports. Personally, I'm very interested in it, but it does depend on the voices of the fans. Some other quotes. I think it would be interesting to do that in our generation now, and I want to do it. I would like to say to Okada and Kiyomiya, let's do a fight that surpasses that. Kiyomiya immediately answered, I hope we can do it. Some other quotes. We only made small talk, but I got a good impression. I want to see Kazuchika Okada fighting before me.
Yeah.
So, let's point out, of course, that the last time New Japan, All Japan, and NOAH all co-promoted a show was the All Together shows in 2011 and 2012.
Yeah, and that was a charity effort for the Tohoku earthquake disaster on top of it, too. So yeah. You had a much different time. Companies were a little bit more receptive at the time, but the atmosphere has changed a little bit. I mean, we've seen other degrees of people working. We've obviously mentioned the New Japan NOAH relationship many times during the earlier days of Strong Style Story and how that almost killed NOAH outright.
Yeah, it nearly did.
Yeah, and you've had, NOAH, New Japan guys working the Giant Bomb and Destroyer tribute shows that were basically, All Japan hosted. You had guys from All Japan and NOAH working Lionsgate at a certain point when that was an ongoing thing. But the biggest thing that I want to mention, outside of the fact that NOAH just hasn't worked with New Japan in any way, shape, or form since the Bushiroad sort of partnership that they had, is that recently NOAH got acquired by CyberConnect and by Obama TV.
Which I failed to mention on the blog. Now there's a DDT thing going on too. Yeah.
And when you consider that the last time that New Japan and DDT interacted with each other, that did not go over so well when they tried to basically outright steal Harashima from them at the time in which he was the ace of the company.
I don't know.
Logistics are sketchy. The logistics are very sketchy, but
logistics or politics.
Yeah,
the logistics could be too if you take into account the Olympics.
Yeah,
I mean they could be. I'll tell you what, there could be a time period where they could do that in between the Olympics and the Paralympics.
True, that's a possibility. I do think as well that, worst comes to worst, the biggest factor here is, to me, how much pull does Okada, Kaito, and Kento respectively have with their companies? Because I think that if the three of them can get the main three on board, everything else sort of falls together. It's just a matter of like how much can they pull.
Yeah. But I mean, let's face it. I mean, we've seen, Kento Miyahara and Hiroshi Tanahashi interact really well together.
Yes, to the point
where, remember, at the end of the Baba show, Miyahara did his Psycho bit at the end, but how did it end?
Aishitemasu and the air guitars.
Yeah.
Just.
So, I mean, it's possible. Again, this seems to be like the New Japan and AEW situation, too.
Mm-hmm.
The wrestlers are really into this idea. It's just getting
the executives, getting the execs to go
for it.
Mm-hmm.
And can they make the logistics happen during the Olympics?
Mm-hmm.
So here's a question: why not take it outside of?
I was thinking honestly, they could do it in Osaka. They
could do it in run Osaka Joe Hall again.
Exactly, I do think that they could easily sell out in Osaka Joe Hall. And Captain Jack Heartless and I were talking about this, and he mentioned Osaka specifically as a really good place where they could possibly pull this off if they decided to do it. So yeah.
I mean, they could.
I'm in agreement with that.
Yeah. They could. So
yeah, it doesn't need to necessarily be Tokyo outright. It can still happen on that same time frame, but people are going to be in Japan, and most likely people from all over the world coming to see Japan, I don't think they're just going to stay in Tokyo the entire month. They're probably going to take a weekend to go to Osaka or to Hokkaido, depending on whatever it is that they want to see. It's a prime opportunity to do something like this that is not going to come at any point soon after. So
yeah, I mean if they decide to go outside of Tokyo, which I think would be a good idea, because all the major shows always happen in Tokyo, why not move it to something else?
Yeah.
Somewhere else, I mean,
yeah, just try to rock crowd. I mean, you could do Osaka. Even Saitama would be a good option
Saitama.
As well.
How about Yokohama?
Yeah, that as well.
Yokohama? Is Kawasaki Stadium still a thing? Actually, it isn't. I took a look at it. It actually is not, so.
Dang it. If only, right?
could have had Onita show up for that one, just because.
Yeah, it's just like suddenly like 70-year-old Onita is just sitting in the rafter smoking a cigarette, just Don't mind
setting,
me.
Just setting off fireworks on him, on himself, you know, just
yep. Technical.
Anyway, so on Friday night, on Valentine's Day, in York Hall, Will Ospreay beat Zack Sabre Jr. for the undisputed British heavyweight title.
We kind of saw that coming once the rematch got announced for that RevPro show.
Yeah.
But some other stuff happened there, too. I mean, El Fantasma finally lost the undisputed cruiserweight heavyweight championship to Michael Oku, a.k.a. The Ojimo. So apparently, I guess that was a good match as well. And good old Tomoyuki Oka, still there.
Dominator Great Okarn.
Yep.
He and Rampage Brown retained the undisputed British tag team titles, beating David Starr and Damian Dunn.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Shooter was not on this show though, oddly enough.
Yeah, I don't believe so, but I think Shooter's been all over the place because I know he's worked a couple of the OTT shows as well too, over in Ireland as well. Oh,
okay. All right. Well, maybe there just wasn't any. I mean, with all these guest stars coming in, then maybe they just didn't have, you know.
Yeah, specifically, he was probably just watching from the back, basically, and maybe worked a dark match or something. Who knows, man?
I didn't see that listed on Cage Match, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's a wait and see approach at this point. But
how about LA? I have great interest in seeing LA Park and Eddie Kingston, though.
Yeah, I am curious about that as well, actually. Not gonna lie.
And then last night, closer to home, my home anyway, Warrior Wrestling 8 took place at Marion Catholic High School in Chicago Heights, Illinois. As far as the New Japan relevant stuff, Ren Narita fell to Alex Shelley.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. I don't know many more details. I actually could not go to that one. I had some other things going on. I heard from friend of the show, the Cubs fan who was in attendance, that Barbara Carbonario against Templario was really good. Templario got the win on that one, I heard.
Well, fun stuff.
So, and then there, you know, everything else is just kind of a mixed bag of varying qualities, because, I mean, we also had, you know, Jonathan Gresham against Daga and Rascals against Stronghearts and you know, good old Warhorse, Jake Parnell. Mm. But also Bubba Ray Dudley and Michael Elgin and, you know, other
stuff. Crapola. People we don't really care about anyways.
So, yeah. So we just said, yeah, you know, maybe it wasn't the worst thing. I guess you can watch it on Fight TV if you want to pay the mm-hmm. the fee for that. And, you know, just don't jiff it, whatever you do, because.
Yeah, it is really interesting, though, because I'm looking at Shoto Mino's, because as we talked about him, like the last event that he was known to work on, he was at Bar Wrestling just earlier this month with teaming with Rocky, Ren Narita, and Chris Bay on top
of
it.
Oh, no shit?
Which,
how we missed that?
I don't know how I personally missed it either, but sad times, man. Like, that sounds like it would have been fun to see.
Oh, man, I may.
Rocky, Ren, and Shota team up, yeah.
Boy, I hope it. I hope it made.
Some sort of VOD or whatever it is.
Yeah, I hope it made tape somehow. So yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it sounds like it. But then again, this does give me hope that Shota being able to come into the U.S. and work these sorts of shows, that he has a visa to work more U.S. dates indie-wise down the line too.
But
so,
he'll be separated from his master because of AEW contracts. So yeah, Jesus.
R.I.P. I mean, he got gifted a very nice jacket from him for Christmas, so...
He did, that was...
The connection's still strong.
Oh, boy, can you just imagine, because we get all these young Tanahashi and Miyahara vibes off of Shooter, but can you imagine that, you know, imagine that with a little bit of quote-unquote corruption from Mox?
And yeah,
what could this turn into down the line?
It's a very, again, timing being everything, and somehow, some way, in another 5 years, we're probably going to be talking about how Jon Moxley getting out of WWE benefited Shota Umino the most out of everybody.
Oh my god, yeah, for reals. Yeah, how can, we'll, you know, hopefully we'll be around, this show will be around at that time, but,
I mean, we made it this far, so who knows, man?
Who knows? I mean, we're definitely gonna see out 5 years, and then we'll figure out what we're gonna do after that. So let's speaking of looking into the future, this week, two retirements from
Indeed.
long time. Oh wait, what's this? What are you sending me?
Oh, just
What are you
one
sending?
of
What are you
proof.
sending me on?
Proof of Shoto Umino's appearance in bar wrestling, basically.
Oh shit. Okay, I'll have to take a look at that later.
Yeah.
So anyway, as we discuss, two retirements on Wednesday the 19th, the retirement of one Tiger Hattori, in which he's going to referee two different he's going to ref two matches, those matches being Hiroshi Tanahashi, Kota Ibushi, Toriano, and Colt Cabana. Wow, there's a matchup
I mean,
against
hey.
against Tama Tonga, Tongaloa, Jay White, and Bad Luck Fale.
Listen, he just could not pass up the chance of, refereeing the True Aces a True Aces match in one of his final outings
Yes.
and trying to deal with that bullshit of the
Yeah.
turnbuckles.
Oh my goodness. And then his second retirement match will be Kazuchika Okada, Tomohiro Ishii, and Hirooki Goto against Tetsuya Naito, Sonata, and Shingo, followed by his retirement ceremony. It's amazing. He's had quite the career
Indeed.
as a referee. It's gonna be sad to see him no longer in the ring refereeing matches. But on that note, tying into the other retirement is we have the first of the four final Manabu Nakanishi matches as well, in which the dads are basically just going up against every unit possible to leading up. So that match is Nakanishi, Tenzan, Kojima, and Nagata against Minoru Suzuki, Taichi, El Desperado, and Yoshinobu Kanemaru. So that'll be interesting, and that's all on NJPW World. So is Nakanishi's retirement show, and his retirement match is the dads. I don't think we really need to go down the list of who those are at this point. The dads against Kazuchika Okada, Hiroshi Tanahashi, Kota Ibushi, and Hirooki Goto. And then his retirement ceremony that also will be on NJPW. Sandwich in between those are two New Japan Road shows in which we get other Nakanishi retirement matches, as well as some title matches here. The Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championships, Sho and Yo defending against the Mega Coaches.
Yes, well,
Tegoshi and Rocky.
I believe they have a win over them from the Junior Tag Tournament
I
back
think they
last
do.
year.
I believe they
So,
do.
very, very interesting to see Rocky kind of go from what initially we thought was more the role of, managerial coaching stuff since breaking off RPG Vice with Trent eventually leaving and stuff, with Trent hopefully getting a singles run initially, but then him actually leaving the company outright with
Right.
Chuck Taylor. But to see him and Taguchi together, not only just as, the coach gimmicks and the like, but also them being kind of the elder statesman of the junior division against two of its youngest rising stars right now. So.
Yeah, so that will be interesting. And then the main event of the show on the 20th, this Thursday, is Shingo against Tomohiro Ishii defending the Never Openweight title.
Indeed.
So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that as well for sure.
And then the next day on Friday the 21st, we have the third Nakanishi final match against going up a Bullet Club team, the dads against a Bullet Club team, Jay White, Balak Fale, Jado, and Gato. And then we have two title matches on this one too. The comedy titles, Evil, Shingo, and Bushi against Toriano, Colt Cabana, and Ryusuke Taguchi. Boy, at this point, yeah. Yano and Taguchi are just, like, more inseparable than Makabe and Yano at this point.
The kings of comedy.
Yeah, with Colt Cabana on top of that. So, yeah, if you wonder why we call them the comedy titles, there you go.
There you go.
And then the main event of that is the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Championship, the Gorillas of Destiny against the Golden Aces.
There we go. Kind of the sort of what we were probably expecting in the Atlanta show at that point with New Japan. But then again, the Ibushi health situation kind of having to throw things into a bit of a, you know, audible loop. So,
yeah. So, yeah. So, Chris, I haven't heard what you haven't really said much on this topic. What are your feelings about Nakanishi's retirement?
To me in particular, again, it's from a time, he's from a time before me. I understand the semblance of importance that he may have had during that during his prime with generations and such, but I do think that at the very least, for the past couple of years, we've always talked about how he's sort of been almost held together by duct tape and prayers and possibly super glue here and there. So, like, him giving his body some much-needed rest and probably being able to enjoy things either from, like, an office training perspective or just going into the great beyond, whatever he chooses to do, I wish him nothing the best. And may he continue to have his monster mornings with the insane breakfast that he has almost every single friggin' day.
Yeah, I mean, I could see him still working in the dojo, too, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, at the same time, like I said, I've never really been a fan of his, and the last few years, there were just some matches where you watch him, and he just looks like he's just not there. Like, there may be some CTE going on with him. Because, I mean, just some of the looks on his face, he just looks like he was just mentally just not there.
Kind of just not in the right headspace, you mean? That sort of thing?
No, I mean, like, maybe, like, he was, I don't even know if he was aware he was wrestling a match.
Goodness.
Like, that sort of thing, you know? But, I mean, it's fine. I mean, I don't hate Nakanishi like I did, like, Kensuke Sasaki from that time. I mean, obviously, of the pair of Nagata and Nakanishi, or even Nakanishi and Kojima at one, you know, just prior to, you know, to the NWO era, I mean, obviously, you know, he to me, he was the lesser of his partnerships. But, fair. I mean, I'm not going to fault him. I mean, yeah, he's been with the company through thick and thin at this point, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, he was one of the many that, you know, he did stick around during the tough times. And he's a lifer. You got to respect that. He's a lifer with the company. So, yeah, I mean, I don't wish him ill will at all. I hope he does well in his post-in-ring career. But, yeah, I mean, I hope he does well. And, yeah, he does bring, you know, fans enjoyment to stick around that long.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, even if he was never one of my favorites, so.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, but again, look who else was in New Japan at the time. You know, Chono, Tenzan, Tenzan, you know, obviously my all-time favorite, Keiji Muto, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, he was surrounded by a lot of great guys at the time, and some not-so-great ones, too, let's be honest. Like I said, I make no bones about the fact I fucking hated Kensuke Sasaki.
Yeah,
you know,
you have not been shy about that in any way, shape, or form. Now,
yeah, no. So, I mean, you know, he was a product of his time. Obviously, you know, he had you know, very, very Riki Choshu influenced, you know, wrestler in a lot of ways. Which I was never a huge Riki Choshu fan either, if I'm going to be quite honest.
Yeah,
but you know, and I feel bad because now it sounds like I'm just shitting on Nakanishi. But you know what? No, I mean he was fine. He did what he had to do, and he was, you know, he was over with the crowd. So obviously I'm in a minority, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you know, him and Nagata, I think it was definitely his best partnership.
Yes,
they definitely worked well, very well together. And I can't fault, you know, definitely can't fault that. And, you know, he won a G1 climax, so, you know.
Yeah, he's got, it's the situation where he's got historical relevance to the company, even if he might not be some people's favorites. And I mean, if he was one of your favorites, if you're listening during that particular time, like, I hope that you're able to fully enjoy, you know, the ceremonies and these final matches to come and just, you know, get all the emotions that you need to get out of the way from that and, you know, just have the best time. Because, you know, he may, it's that situation again where he might have not been our favorite, but he still had a long and prosperous enough career to remember to where hopefully this is something special for a lot of his fans out there who were just waiting to see him go out into the limelight, and that you get to see him and you get to see him go out on his terms, which is the most important bit.
Right. And, you know, and two, again, I, you know, Tiger Hattori, I think I'm a bit, little bit more affected by, because I just, you know, you just, how do you not like Tiger Hattori? You know, he's, you know, it's just going to be weird not having him around, you know?
Yeah, we're just used to, like, this hierarchy of Red Shoes, Tiger Hattori, and then everybody else on the refereeing side of the scale. So, yeah, it'll be really just odd to not see him there for a while at this point. But then again, he's been sort of phasing out slowly out of the referee shuffle of things recently. So it's...
Right, but I mean, like... as far as referees go, I think, you know, Tiger Hattori was probably second only to Kyohei Wada.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, the referees, you know? I mean, yeah, Red Shoes is the top guy, but, I mean, he's still, you know, as far as, like, you know, legendary, yeah, he's still third.
Working his way there.
He's still working his way there. He's still third compared to Tiger Hattori and Kyohei Wada, you know?
Yeah. I get where you're coming from with that, definitely.
Yeah, so, and you know, Wada still hasn't called time yet.
What is still out there trying to get Kento Miyahara to stop headbutting people and using the turnbuckles to choke him out in the process?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the feud between Kento Miyahara and Kyohei Wada is just
Kento is such a little shit to him too. It's amazing, and like it makes him kind of worse for it.
It's amazing how much All Japan content snuck into this episode.
Lo and behold, man, we're just like our wrestling, but...
Yeah, we do. I mean, we drop references here and there. But
yeah, the New Japan Roadshow road tour at this point is definitely going to be kickstarting. We've got a couple of dates already with the cards announced. As you mentioned, the retirements that are happening.
Yeah.
We have a show in Okinawa as well, too, on the 26th, I believe, that we don't have a card for.
Yeah, we don't
yet,
have a card for. So I'm very interested in, now that Jushin Liger's not in the picture anymore. I'm very curious to know if we're going to see Ryukyu Dragon participation, like if Gurikan Mask and are going to be back.
Like, they've been used to kind of coming into that particular Okinawa date over the past couple of years. So, yeah, I'm intrigued to see how that plays out as well.
I'm also still very upset that we can still never have had tape show up of Ryukyu Dragon, because I want to see a show in that fucking cave.
The cave. The mythical cave. cave wrestling. What a time. Another thing to mention as well, too, is that with Lions Break Project 3, which we did talk very briefly last time around about, they do have a full lineup of the talent that's going to be there now, Jeff, if you would.
Oh, yes. I do have that. Actually, you could take this one if you want.
Sure, I can do it. So the full slate of talents that we got announced for that date as part of WrestleCon during WrestleMania weekend on April the 2nd. So the talents are as follows. Hiroshi Tanahashi, Juice Robinson, David Finlay Jr., Rocky Romero, Shingo Takagi, The Gorillas of Destiny, Tama Tonga and Tangaloa, Kenta, Bad Luck Fale, Taiji Ishimori, El Fantasmo, Jado, Ghetto, El Desperado, Zack Sabre Jr., Ren Narita, Clark Connors, Alex Coughlin, Carl Fredericks, Amazing Red, TJP, Mysterio, Logan and
that should be Mysterio. I'm sorry, I fucked that up. My bad.
You were golden. So basically, it's very much your Bullet Club and LA Dojo guys as the majority of the bunch, with a few Suzuki Gun sprinkles here and there.
Right.
We could definitely notice that Jay White and Minoru Suzuki are not amongst the names announced, even though Jay White is going to be down there that weekend for Supercard of Honor and the Bullet Club Block Party. And Minoru Suzuki's dates, which are some very interesting ones, and the fact that he is going to be working Josh Barnett's Bloodsport 3 against Chris Dickinson, who's also working Shingo Takagi at WrestleCon prior to that. And then the biggest news that kind of got dropped on us during this loop from the independent wrestling and New Japan related talents side of the fence were at Joey Janela's Spring Break 4. The goddamn Madman once again did it. It's Minoru Suzuki against Orange Cassidy in the deadliest match to begin this particular decade. You see.
There was another one dropped, too, that I don't have in front of me, but Suzuki is working a six-man at the Joey Ryan Penis Party, too.
Oh, yes, right. It is Grado, Joey Ryan, and... is it Colt or is it somebody else? But I know the other team is Filthy Tom Lawler, Ken Shamrock, and Minoru Suzuki.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying this right now. If Shikara isn't looking at this and going, we're booking these three in King of Trios this year, just cancel. Just stop. Like if you were bold enough to give us Scott Steiner, Petey Williams, and Jordan Grace.
Yeah,
as the
right.
big family, you can do this trio.
I'm just going to say that I remember you will recall that I did witness Suzuki against Tom Lawler, and that was fantastic.
Yes. Filthy Tom is great. Just throwing that out there for those who haven't seen him.
Yeah. So it's weird. I mean, yeah, Suzuki doesn't have a lack of things to do during Mania weekend, but it's just weird that he's not on the New Japan show, and neither is Jay White, and both of them are, like, draws.
Yeah, definitely.
It's kind of strange, but...
But then again, they haven't really stopped announcements yet, so who knows? Maybe they decide that, you know, Jay White shows up for a match, or it's more specifically that with the people that are there, they don't want to really run, like, a Tanahashi Suzuki or a Tanahashi White at a random WrestleMania weekend show, where this seems like it's more of a showcase of the company rather than like,
yeah,
oh, this is where we need to get our big matches in kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll see. I mean, there's still plenty of time. They could change their minds. And at some point on the blog, we will compile the full list of NJPW wrestlers during WrestleMania weekend and what they will be doing.
Yeah, because we're still waiting. There's still, like, way more announcements to be made as well in terms of these shows and who's working them. So probably by the next time that we record, we're probably going to have a better idea at that point as to what's really happening.
Are you going to Tampa?
No, I'm cutting that one short, unfortunately.
Yeah,
just
I'm not
due
going
to
either, so.
More so specifically, stuff that needs to be taken care of at home first and foremost, and then I kind of want to go visit friends during times that are not wrestling related for once. So, you know.
Yeah.
Plus with them announcing Madison Square Garden in August, I figure that can be my big summer trip in that situation.
Yeah, I've got a trip I'm going to need to take in May to visit some family. So there's going to be that coming up. So, yeah, I'm not going to.
Yeah, for sure.
I'll just sit on my ass at home and.
Yeah, pretty much. I'll just kind of watch the cards accordingly, pick the shows that I want to see, and just have fun that way and interact with the crowd, with people.
Yeah.
So hopefully,
yeah, I mean,
if you are planning on going to Tampa, you have the absolute best time, if anything.
Yeah, the thing about, you know, that was my first ever Mania weekend last year in New York, and I really think I only quote unquote saw five shows, but. You know, it's just like you really don't have to see every show to feel like you got something out of Mania weekend, you know?
No, you really don't. You just kind of, and that's the lesson that I learned after going to like eight of them in Orlando and legitimately like tiring myself out, kind of thing, to where New York was a much brisker pace, if anything. So
yeah, I mean, New York was fine. I mean, and you know, it's New York. There's not going to be a lack of shit to do in New York.
Exactly.
Tampa, I mean, yeah, you could go to the beach. That's cool. Beaches are great. I love the beach. I mean, that's cool. You go to the Gulf. It's not the ocean. It's the Gulf over in Tampa.
Yeah,
but
I mean, There's still some stuff to do in Tampa. I'm sure it just the biggest thing is try to not OD on wrestling
Yeah,
if
because
you can
otherwise
help it.
you may take a chance of hating wrestling by the time it's all over, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean that. But also, I mean, at least for me personally, there's not. I mean, besides like some of these one-off matches, there's not like a show that has like the power of DDT showing up, you know? Because
Yeah.
that was massive, and it turned out to be like.
A full-fledged like DDT show on top of it, which
It was a first-rate show, and thankfully, the New Japan portion of Madison Square Garden, you know,
was
which is
phenomenal.
why we were there to begin with, let's face it, it was phenomenal too. But yeah, I mean the DDT show, yeah, boy, that was going to be tough to outdo, and there it doesn't look like they're trying. I know Tokyo Joshi is running a card, and then there's some
Some
DDT
DDT
stuff,
involvement.
yeah.
I figured that's Takagi basically trying the Tokyo Joshi portion of the partnership and seeing how they do there before kind of looking at like next year probably. Because I figured with 2021 having Los Angeles announced as the city where they're doing WrestleMania on, I'll most likely be there for that particular weekend because it's an easy enough trip for me. And more than likely, like a lot of these companies with Japan and such, they could take a shot at having like a one-off there because Japan to Los Angeles is not that crazy of a flight kind of
Yeah, LA.
thing.
Yeah, LA may be a thing. Yeah, I may be doing that. Yeah, well, I may be doing LA next year. So,
Things to consider, but at the very least, I think we've covered just about everything that we need to cover on the New Japan side of the fence for this portion of touring and such, so we can
yep.
probably get back to you in a couple of weeks once we have hopefully New Japan Cup lineups announced,
Right, and the
ideally.
full anniversary show lineup too, so don't forget
Yes,
that.
exactly.
So yeah, I guess yeah, I'm done. I got nothing else.
Yeah, I think we
So
can go into plugs at this point, so I will get us started on that
go ahead.
regard. For me, you can find me at Brazilian Fury, both on Instagram as well as on Twitter. That's Brazilian with an S instead of a Z. You can also find my other podcast, Soundtracks on the Sticks, on Twitter at Sounds on Sticks. We're recording sometime over the next week for episode 2, which is super exciting. Jeff?
You can find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style on Twitter. My personal Twitter is at GD Wessel, 2 S's 1 L. The blog is at strongstylestory.tumblr.com. And yeah, and that's oh, and of course you can listen to Chris and I on Boom Goes the Dynamite every week in the immediate aftermath of that week's episode of AEW Dynamite. So, and of course, you know, give a shout out to Dave and Lee of Days of Thunder. Listen to this week's episode. They do mention there's some New Japan relevance there from an episode of Thunder. So yeah, check that one out. So, and of course it's a fine show anyway. And shout out to all the other shows here on the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network, because we do like you. Chris, any final words?
Nope, not at all. Thanks for listening again, even as we sort of rambled on near the end about WrestleMania week and experiences and the like. And enjoy this next string of shows. We'll see you next time.
Yep, we'll be back in a couple of weeks. So until then, take care. Goodbye.